The Ira Kaufman Podcast is presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. At Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, the Memorial Day summer kickoff is on. Get massive savings all month long. And remember, it's backed by Morse. You can also save on a luxurious Cadillac and get more peace of mind at Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon with their like-new certified pre-owned Cadillacs. All certified pre-owned Cadillacs are inspected, reconditioned, and warrantied. And there's also special financing available. See the dealer for details and visit EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com. At Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, it's official. Summer's here and the savings are heating up. Brian Danahy, general manager at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, has the Memorial Day summer kickoff. Take advantage of holiday offers all month long, like 2018 XT5 crossovers, just $299, zero down. But that's not all. Get 0% financing 60 months on all new Cadillac models. Rush to Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, just west of 275 on Fletcher, or visit EdMorseCadillacTampa.com. See the dealer for all the details. Remember, that's EdMorseCadillacTampa.com.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Happy Thursday on the Ira Kaufman Podcast, the Sage Podcast, starring the Sage of Tampa Bay Sports, Mr. Ira Kaufman. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee D. Kemper is in the house, and Ira, we are here at One Buck Palace. One Buck Palace, Ira, doing our thing. How are you today, Mr. Sage?
I'm doing well. I'm enthusiastically. You know, I'm starting to feel like it's football season. We're here at One Buck. Look, we talk to players and the rookies or whatever. But when you start talking to the assistant coaches and the coordinators, like we did today, it really starts to feel like football because we start talking about football. We start talking about using personnel. We start talking about opening day against the Saints. Lee, it's football season. I don't care if it's mid-May.
Well, the only time I ever see you get remotely this excited when you have a chance to talk to assistant coaches one-on-one is when Isbitz cuts you a check.
That's high cotton right there. That's high cotton.
Well, let's be real here. I was excited when the food comes from the Hooters waitress.
True.
What do you mean? I got to go out for my lunch today and then spend my hard-earned dough over here. This is not the Buck fever over here where we get fed during the draft or training camp, Lee.
What happened?
I got to go out and earn for a living over here.
What's the matter? You did check in and clear yet?
No, I don't have any doubts about that. Absolutely no. The deep coffers of Joe Bucks fan, Lee, not a question. It's been fun this week, Steve.
Oh, very much fun. And, of course, it was fun hearing all those offers. We're presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. And to set the stage a little bit, Ira, we're here. We just spoke with all the defensive coaches, peppered them with questions, and we have a special guest. As anybody who took the moment to look at the headline on the podcast, Mark Duffner, linebackers coach of the Buccaneers, sat down with us. We recorded that earlier, and we're going to play it at the end of the podcast. A lot of good stuff. Frankly, a story is going to be revealed here to our listeners that you haven't heard anywhere else that really speaks to the core of what's going on this offseason with the Buccaneers defense, which all the coaches, Ira, know that it was ranked 32nd last year. Everybody knows that. Now, we're not going to spoil it now. We'll let Duffner tell everybody about it, and then in the next podcast, we'll sort of dissect and dive into, man, what, wow. So we'll do that. But first,
you know, Lee, I got to be honest. I haven't had a lot of dealings with Coach Duffner.
Good dude.
In the past. And then he sat down with us today, and as Steve said, very illuminating, you know, part of our podcast. And I found him very refreshing. Honest to the point, disciple of Woody Hayes, Lee. And what do you talk about in terms of Woody Hayes? Honesty. He's got a great story.
Yeah, he's got a great Woody Hayes story there. You got to listen.
All right, Sage. Now, speaking of honesty and direct coaches, the one guy, I'm not calling him dishonest, but good golly, Whoa. He should be running for Senate or something or Congress. Mike Smith, gosh, that guy is so good at talking and saying nothing at the same time. What did you extract from him today? What was key? What was interesting?
Well, it's funny you say that, Steve. First, I think Lee would agree. You know, he's a very decent man.
Oh, great guy.
Mike Smith.
Great guy.
You love him as a neighbor. Fantastic guy. Not a lot of excuses. But I was talking to another member of the Buck organization today after Mike Smith left the podium, and I was saying, you know, boy, he's very measured in how guarded Mike Smith is at the podium. And the guy said, he talks like he's still a head coach, you know. Yeah. And that was very interesting. Very interesting. Although Cutter can be very brutally honest at times from the podium, which is great. Other guys, you know, Lovie Smith, of course, is the classic head coach that says nothing. And Mike Smith, you know, first thing, he's very respectful of Dirk Cutter. So any question that he feels Cutter, you know, it's more should be directed towards the coach, he's not going to say anything. You know, he's not going to usurp any of Cutter's authority or even give the perception. He's very careful about that, Lee. Now, I thought I had him all set up for a beautiful sound bite. Steve, you were right there. Lee, you were there. And I started talking about, you know, boy, this defense got a lot to prove. Mike, could you ask for a better opportunity than going into the Superdome week one against Drew Brees and that high-powered offense? I mean, let's face it. Every year, they're a top-five offense. Year after year, Sean Payton and Drew Brees. That is a deadly combination,
combination
for defensive coordinators around the NFL. I mean, over a long period. They got together in 2006. Haven't stopped running since. And I'm waiting. I'm bracing for a great sound bite, you know. Boy, that's a great offense. You know, if we're the defense that I think we are, we're going to go in there and show our stuff. I got pablum. I got pablum, DeKemper. You know, by now, I shouldn't expect any more, Lee. He's a very decent man. He spits out each word very conscientiously and doesn't like to talk off the cuff very much.
Well, to give you an idea what kind of sick individual I am, or twisted, or I guess both.
Twisted, I think.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. 2 years ago, shortly after the Bucks hired Mike Smith, Dirk Cutter hired Mike Smith, I got hold of Mike Smith's book, and I'm sitting at the bar at 1 o'clock in the morning at the five-star Aria Casino and Resort
in Las Vegas. Instead of hitting up the waitress, you got your nose into a book.
Yeah, and a businesswoman. I'm sitting there taking notes on a legal pad with my iPad on this book, which I, you know,
that tells us all we need to know about DeKemper,
yeah,
right, Steve?
Footballaholic. You know, most people go to Vegas for obvious reasons outside of gambling and things of that nature. And here I am at the bar with a book and a pen and a legal pad.
What do you got, a yellow marker, and you're highlighting
Didn't go that bad.
Of Mike Smith?
Didn't go that far, not with the highlighter, but that's what I was doing. But anyway, if you had read his book, the way he speaks in front of us, he's not trying to be dishonest or anything. Control is a key word, control. It's an image, it's a message. And he doesn't want to deviate from that message. So that's why he can be less than candor will come from him. Well, he had a couple of one-liners. I love Mike Smith. There may not be a better guy I've ever met. So it pains me whenever I write or say anything negative, because I like the guy so much, but I got to separate the two. When he said they're going to have good football players, talented football players, who aren't going to make this team, it's like, Mike, you were 32nd in the league last year. Give me a break. If you were that talented, you wouldn't have been 32nd in the league. Come on.
But I think the point he was making, there's a lot more depth, certainly up front, and maybe in the secondary, where the 54th player who doesn't make the team maybe could start for another. You're rolling your eyes already.
Oh, my gosh.
I didn't even finish.
Elizabeth's face.
Oh,
my
God.
It was like you're trying to sell him a gold nugget.
Steve, what did you think of that comment where he talks like a head coach? Do you think there's any validity to that, even though he's only a coordinator? Does that make sense to you?
I think after talking to Coach Duffner and the rest of the coaches, Coach Buckner, certainly, who's way out there on another planet, which is fantastic.
Munkin's good.
And Munkin, yeah. And Cutter, Mike Smith is the more corporate, gobbled
corporate
pablum mold, which is okay. And I agree with you, though. I think he is talking more like a head coach. And it wasn't like he was exactly asked a bunch of tough questions, like, what are you calling that on third down for, coach? We're talking about overview stuff. But he did offer some things. I was just a little disappointed in general because nobody's talked to Mike Smith since the end of the season.
That's right. That's right.
And anyway, I thought one thing was very interesting. He said, obviously, Gerald McCoy is the top player on this defense. Did you catch that?
Yes, I did catch that.
So that was a pretty strong darn statement. You got Jason Pierre-Paul in the house now. You got
Quan Alexander.
You got Pro Bowlers on the roster
and
still.
And Brent Grimes, that's right.
So that was quite a little nugget there.
Well, how about that? And I don't disagree with Mike. I think McCoy is, you know, the most talented player.
I don't have a big problem with saying that.
But did he not also say, you take that statement, he's the best player on the team.
On the defense.
Did he not also say they're not building the defense around McCoy? McCoy bristled last year when they tried to play some three-man front. Did Smith not say they were not building the defense around McCoy?
The one thing we didn't get from Mike Smith is any semblance that they were going to go to a three-man line in any extensive fashion this year. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think it's in the cards. You might see it on occasion, Steve. That's for years from now, I think, when Vita Vea takes a more active role, maybe as a prototypical nose tackle in a three-man front. They're not there yet.
I didn't catch that specifically, Lee, but I might have missed it. I certainly might have missed it. that he said that. Were they really doing that last year? Maybe they were. I don't know. Were they building it around McCoy?
They were building the defense around McCoy. They certainly ignored him when he bristled and got upset because they're running some, not all, but some three-man fronts.
Steve, one of my takeaways, tell me what you thought. You know, certainly that did jump out at me about McCoy. But, you know, according to Mike Smith, and we're only in mid-May, don't count out Vernon Hargraves as a starter opposite Brent Grimes when they're not in the nickel. On the outside as a corner. I don't think that's going to happen. We'll see the way things fall. Hargraves is going to have to improve a heck of a lot as an outside corner to merit that. You got a couple of rookies, one in particular, who really wants that job. Ryan Smith, who, you know, the secondary coach said came on pretty darn strong
yeah,
the second half of the season.
I heard Hoke say
you
that.
You did heard, hear on. That. I think Hargraves is ticketed to be the nickel guy, and I think Hargraves is going to have to accept that role. We'll see what happens.
Well, I've been writing this for a couple months. The Bucks did not draft Vernon Hargraves 11th overall to be a nickel corner. And given the fact that's a wide-open position, I don't care what Hoke said. Ryan Smith, he came a long way. Came a long way because you guys figured out he was a safety. Then he had an epiphany that he wasn't.
But Lee's not going to win that job as the starting outside corner if he doesn't outplay all his competitors.
Thank
he's not
going
to get it because he's the 11th pick, in it, nor do you want him to get
it. They're not
going
to hand it to him, but they certainly want him to win that position. I've been writing that all along. I don't expect them to hand him that position, but he's going to get every opportunity in the world to win that position because, again, you know, we're talking investments here.
Yes,
they
yes.
don't invest an 11th overall pick to be a guy that could draft in the third round to play a slot. So, but I'm not saying they are not, nor should they gift him that job. He has to earn it. But I got the impression they're going to give him every chance to win that job. And there is an opening there. I mean, Ryan Smith is, I mean, come on. And it's between Ryan Smith and a rookie. I mean, gag me, man.
I understand.
I'm glad you understand, Ira.
Ira understands I'm going to yak on the table just thinking about that.
A couple of things, Sage. I was trying to put my own press coverage on Mike Smith saying, look, are you giving Vernon Hargraves, you're going to let him lean in one direction entering camp here that you're an outside corner who's going to work in at nickel, or are you leaning nickel at playing outside too? What's the deal? And that's where he sort of said outside and nickel, which gave the impression of he'll be competing for that outside spot. And I was thinking, I talked about this with Lee before the podcast, and it's gray area, Ira, so we don't know. Neither of us know. But it sure felt like he was almost thinking of Hargraves in a Rondé Barber kind of role where he's outside and then moves inside. Did you get that feeling?
You just put Vernon Hargraves and Rondé Barber in the same sentence. That should end this podcast right now. And I don't mean any disrespect to Vernon Hargraves, but you're talking
of
about a guy that I expect to make a Hall of Fame speech for in February in Atlanta. And I'll be bitterly disappointed if once again, for the second straight year, he doesn't get in the room, Rondé Barber. That would be a travesty.
And what kind of speech are you going to make for Hargraves?
Well, on his way out the door, I'll open the door for him. But, Steve, I understand what you're saying. Look, I'm going to tell you right now. I think Carlton Davis, a month into the season, is going to be the starting outside corner.
You think so?
I do. I think they like the guy. They like his length. They like his physicality. And he's going to play press coverage because that's what he does.
A month into the season? What the hell does that mean?
It means that Ryan Smith might start. And eventually, Carlton Davis is going to win that job.
Go ahead, Steve.
So, Smith, you mean Smith played so badly in the first four games that in comes Carlton Davis?
Well, I don't know if I want Carlton Davis covering Michael Thomas week one in New Orleans.
I don't disagree with you, but the first thing I thought of when you said that, they're 0-4.
I'm not going there, DeKemper. I'm the guy that says they should go to New Orleans and kick Drew Brees in the ass. and I hope Buck Nation agrees with me. I'm not counting that game as a loss.
I'm not counting anything as a loss, but there's a month into the season. What corner jumps in week five as
an
injury?
You work them in. You work them in, Lee. You work them in
slowly. Well, I'm leaning towards Steve. If you anoint a starter a month into the season, that's a panic move.
I don't see it as a panic move. I see it as a guy who steadily improves and gets in on a spot basis for the first month. And if the guy shows what you think he's got, then you use him more extensively.
So you're sort of saying it's he's sort of like the Justin Evans of 2018.
You want to dump a second round pick into the starting lineup? Presto, change him. It doesn't work like that, is it?
I just want the best guy to play, Ira. And one way to play is by going to FanRetreat.com. That's where you get all your event tickets, your flights, and you use your Joe Bucks Fan discount code, and you're going to get great discounts. Buccaneers tickets, Lightning tickets, every kind of concert. Get your hotels, your rent-a-cars. And if you want to go on the Bourbon Street Takeover with Bucks Uncensored and Ira and Lee and Justin Pulaski and the Stick Carriers, what you want to do to get your initial wave of information, and I just got an update on all the stuff that's going on behind the scenes before they roll out what this package is going to be, text TAKEOVER to 345-345, like 300 other Bucks fans already have done. Text TAKEOVER 345-345. And Fan Retreat's going to get that info and make sure you're updated immediately when all the specs come out, and you'll have first crack at that. Text TAKEOVER to 345-345. FanRetreat.com. Use your Joe Bucks Fan discount code.
Steve, I don't think it's an exaggeration to say in mid-May, and that game's not till September 9th or 10th, Lee DeKemper, as we speak, is drifting off to sleep each night thinking of Gumbo in his favorite New Orleans haunt, because he always tweets as soon as he gets to New Orleans that he's going there, and then a picture when he gets there.
The Gumbo Shop.
You love it.
No, I do have higher standards for things I think about when I fall asleep at night. But the Gumbo Shop is not far from that.
All right, Ira, you said Vernon Hargraves to start outside. He's going to have to improve a heck of a lot to start at corner on the outside. Now,
you have a problem with me saying that?
I don't have a problem with you saying that at all, except, you know, they started a rookie corner 2 years ago named Vernon Hargraves, and they went 9-7, and he wasn't exactly had fans jumping off bridges. So if they think the rookie corner is up to it, throw him in there. This is why you drafted the guy. Let it rip. If you're not going to get a veteran, which I think it seems like they won't do that. I think they're going to let these guys slug it out, and whoever looks best, they'll throw them out there. But one thing I wanted to get your sage take on, Ira, because you don't hear this very often from NFL coaches. Maybe you have in your 73 years covering the league, but recently I haven't heard this a lot. Mike Smith went up there. He stood at the podium today. I already wrote this up on Joe Bucks Fan as we sit here recording. He adamantly said salary and draft status will not matter.
You've been screaming about that for 2 years.
But you don't hear that from coaches very often. And 2 years ago, Dirk Cutter said, well, hey, first-round pick, he's got to be out there playing. So what do you think of that?
I think it goes right to the Swaggy Baker problem. Beautiful. I'm glad Mike Smith said it. Why'd Swaggy Baker start ahead of McDonald? Investiture. Jason Light hanging over the depth chart over there. Yeah, we brought this guy in. I targeted him and DeSean Jackson. We got to start him. It was obvious to the three of us. Midway through the season, Clinton McDonald's a better player. Yeah. He's playing better than that. Good for Mike Smith to say that. On the defensive line, he's got options. Maybe he can say that now, Lee. He didn't have options last year. Golston, you're starting at left end. Well, watch yourself, Will Golston, because guess what? Jason Pierre-Paul's played a lot of left end and played it very successfully. And if Noah Spence is coming around at right end, or you got Curry, you know, there's options for, and what did Mike Smith say the most today? Versatility, flexibility, that's what he wants, and that's what Jason Light just got him in the offseason.
I thought it was Smith's comment there was, I don't know if sinister's overstatement, but a little darker than what you're saying, Ira. I think it was basically saying, admitting, backs against the wall. We need results. I don't care who you are, don't care what your last name is, don't count how many zeros you have in your paycheck.
When you were drafted.
Yeah, we need results, period. End of story. That's what I think. I could be dead wrong, but that's what I got out of it.
And I think that's a mindset going through the organization for sure. How could it not be? How
you know one thing be? That didn't come up today with Mike Smith? Maybe we ran out of time. Maybe you. The next question, this question was on Isbitz's tongue, but we didn't ask him about third down defense.
I imagine he's happy about
well,
that.
Who else goes from first to last? That's almost impossible. Nobody does.
Oh, I got a better
first
question.
First to last, Kemper? We're not talking about going from 10th to 18th. First to last.
I got
wow,
a better
what an incredible
question.
Plunge. That's coming, you know, that's plunging off Hiawatha Falls over there and going into the water.
My rhetorical question would be, how did he survive as far as his job? Like I said, great guy, but holy cow, there were a lot of coordinators that lost their jobs last year that didn't have as bad.
But, Lee, to be fair, in 2016, the defense was fueling that five-game winning streak.
Five games.
In 2016. But you know what? They couldn't keep it up in the end when they were 8-5. They didn't play well enough on defense.
And as much as I hammered Will Golson last year, and he deserved it, I'm sorry. You're starting defensive end. You come up with no sacks after you come off a new contract. You deserve every critique you get. However, the year before, when Golson went down, they were never the same. The run on the right side, left side of the Bucks, the right side of the offense, that was just exposed.
Well, it was an interesting display by Mike Smith. I did throw him a... I didn't even think of it as a softball, but it was a softball that he could have gone in so many directions. I asked him, looking at all that film, all that whole self-scouting, what were the highlights of last season? What stood out?
That's
what
a nice positive? Softball,
That's
Steven.
A softball.
That's a beauty.
He didn't name any players.
That's like Denny McClain threw that pitch to Mickey Mantle. He told him, I'm throwing your fastball down the middle. It was Mantle's last season.
He
hit the ball 440 feet.
He goes
and tipped his hat to McClain. Thank you, Denny.
He goes to the we played really hard card.
High school.
I hate that stuff. All right.
So you know what? He could have said Justin Evans. He could have mentioned a couple of guys.
He could have said a lot of things. He didn't mention a player, which, yeah, maybe that's...
Did Justin Evans' name come up today?
No. Well, not with Mike Smith.
All right.
But maybe that goes to Lee's point about, you know, his leadership philosophy in the book and all that stuff to keep it as a unit as much as he possibly can.
And you hit
the
nail on the head, by the way, when you said corporate. Mike Smith talks like a CEO. He really does. He speaks like a CEO.
And by the way, one quick thing, and we've talked about this on the podcast. I think it was reinforced by Coach Smith today, Lee. I don't want to read too much into it. When he talked about Vinnie Curry, he talked about a lot of his attributes, his energy, his passion for the game, you know, his physical skills. And I think he went out of his way to say very effective both inside and outside.
Mm-hmm.
Lee, that goes to your point the other day when you said ideally, what do you got on third and nine? What do you got? Well, what you got is Pierre Paul, Noah Spence at the ends, Vinnie Curry, not Vita Vea, and not Bo Allen. Vinnie Curry inside next to Gerald McCoy. I think that in an ideal world, that's the way they're going to line up on most third and longs.
Yeah, and in an ideal world, you actually have third and longs. So,
yes,
I mean,
thank you.
Let's get there first. All right, Sage. Now, Brenson Buckner talked to the media today. The guy's a walking one-liner.
Fantastic.
He's fantastic. We talked about him last podcast. Was there a one-liner that you liked today or just a general vibe from Buckner? I'm going to ask you to keep it brief because we're going to get to Mr. Duffner shortly.
Well, what I like about Buckner is he doesn't shirk responsibility in terms of how important his unit is. It all starts there, and Buckner doesn't give you that gobbledygook. Oh, there's three units on the defense. We all have equal responsibility. No. Not for Brenson Buckner. My guys have to do their job or it's all going to fall apart. And if they do their job, it's all going to be good for the most part. I like that about Brenson Buckner. And when he finished that big speech, I go, Buck, if you tell that to your guys, they're going to ask the Bucks for Jason Light for more money. You're building them up too much. He just laughed. But you know my point, Lee.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't shirk that responsibility.
Yeah, it's great. If I remember the quote correctly, I could be wrong, but I didn't write it down, but I heard the quote correctly. He said, the defensive line affects the whole defense.
Spoken as a former defensive lineman.
Yeah. Now, there was a quote, not from our sit-down with Mark Duffner, which you will hear very shortly, but when he spoke with the media as a whole. And I think it was to your question, Steve. He was talking about blitzes, linebacker blitzes. He said, if we blitz, the quarterback has to feel us. That was one thing I thought he said. Another thing is, sacks are great, but his goal is a sack and a strip or a sack and a fumble.
Oh, you're talking about Duffner now,
yes,
not Buckner. Yeah, I asked him, Ira, the, you know, just sort of the money question of the season in my mind anyway is, you know, how do Lavonte David and Quan Alexander not get any sacks? Is it technique? Is it scheme? Is it bad luck? What's going on?
How could it be technique when Lavonte David's already proven to be a good pass rusher?
I don't know what the coach is going to say. I ask him the question.
You know, but you know what I'm saying.
Sure, yeah. But he did go to timing and technique and everything and, you know, emphasize, like Lee just said, that, hey, you know, I'm also looking at hitting the quarterback, affecting the quarterback. Obviously, we want sack fumbles. You know, he didn't shirk away from the responsibility that, hey, those guys just weren't anywhere good enough blitzing. Which
you know what the critical answer to that question is, Lee, and I don't think I'm exaggerating here. Everybody knew they needed to blitz. They had to blitz.
They had nothing up
they
front.
They couldn't get
That's
anything up front, so they were prepared. Now, if things go the way Buckner and Cutter and Light, all and Mike Smith, all think it's going to this fall. They blitz when they want to blitz. And on paper, that should make it much more effective as a blitzer. Everybody knew they had to blitz, Lee. Tell me where I'm wrong.
No, I think you're right. I was told months ago that some of the Bucs linebackers were playing too close to the line of scrimmage, therefore taking them out of their normal position where they could be more effective because they were so horrendous up front. And I was told that back in January at the East-West Shrine.
Did you ask Smith the question in that regard?
Well, I did ask him a specific question about that with a specific player, but I heard in general from a Bucs assistant way back in January, and I think I mentioned it once or twice on this podcast.
Well, you might ask Duffner, which we'll hear in the
I asked Duffner specifically more about that.
Yeah, and Mike Smith actually today went out of his way to say that Kendall Beckwith, way out of position. He's not a pass rusher.
He didn't
dance around that. He just said that, hey, the guy can't do it.
Yeah, we played him at defensive end, yeah. You know.
Right, and that was quite a bit. A lot of guys were off the edge there that had no business being off the edge. One thing I liked from Buckner, he made the size doesn't matter comment regarding Vita Vea, and basically throwing out a nugget. Hey, look, Aaron Donald's the best defensive lineman in the game. He plays 280. I don't care about size. He talked about guys he played next to in the league. I forgot the name he dropped, but one guy was 360. So I like that Buckner just really doesn't care. He knows everything, and he doesn't care about all the stuff
results
that maybe other people care about. It's, can you play? And he had a lot of great things about Vea to say, talking about his work ethic. And that just the guy is real even lighthearted. He can. This is Buckner talking, that he can laugh at himself. And, hey, he screws up, he's good with it. You know, if I lean into him, he's fine with it. Let's
keep
going. What
do you think of Smith's comments, Steve, about his first meeting with Vea at the combine?
Well, I asked him about that. I thought it was funny. He said he looked like a model. He thought he was svelte. he didn't look like your typical 350.
A svelte 350.
I got to be honest. When I first stood next to Vea and I'm hearing all about he's so huge, he's so huge, like, he's not that huge. He weighs a lot, but I've seen much bigger men.
Ira, it took a lot for me to not say to Mike Smith, so you're saying he wasn't from the Swaggy Baker School of Fitness? I really wanted to say that. It would have been great, but I didn't do it. One thing I wanted to say, which is a neat nugget, I talked to Duffner about this, not in the interview that we're going to hear shortly. Asked Duffner about the effect of Brenton Buckner on the staff. And Duffner talked about how, unless I heard it wrong, he coached with the Bengals when Buckner was there.
He did say that.
Oh, wow.
That was kind of interesting. And
Buckner stood out to him as a guy that was game planning.
Yeah, Buckner stood out to him with a mentality and just a way about him. And we'll write that up.
An awareness. Johnson, yeah, yeah.
That he said he still brings the same level of energy, still stuff that he sees today, which, is interesting. I think... I don't know. Maybe we're just pie in the sky, but I think the effect that Buckner is going to have will be meaningful.
I'm totally with you. I think he's as key an addition up front as Jason Pierre-Paul, and I think he's going to prove that.
Well, I'm sort of like Steve. I hope we're not overstating his importance, but he certainly seems to be a shot in the arm that this organization needed. That's certainly the defense.
I think our listeners are in for a treat here with this. With this Coach Duffner.
I love the Woody Hayes story, but I'm a history guy. I'm a story guy.
We've had a lot of great guests on this podcast, and Duffner takes his rightful place near the top. He was very engaging.
Yeah.
Very engaging.
All right, Ira, I'm going to ask you, because a lot of our listeners have no idea who Woody Hayes is, so give me...
Oh!
That's just the
reality.
That's
like saying people don't know who Dwight Eisenhower is.
Legendary Ohio
legendary.
State coach. Legendary!
My
Ohio
God.
State coach.
So insulting. I don't know who Woody Hayes is.
Been to so many Rose Bowls, and didn't he get involved with the sideline spat with a guy?
I was actually 11 years old. I saw that live at my cousin's house in the basement. I remember seeing it against Clemson in the Gator Bowl where he lost his mind and he slugged, I can't think of the guy's name, but he slugged a linebacker for Clemson late in the game when he picked off Art Sleaster. Art Sleaster.
There you go. And Steve, I think he's kind of the originator of the 3 yards and a cloud of dust.
Oh, yeah. He was one of those guys.
But very successful.
And I'm waiting for Isbeth to explain who this is now. He was basically the football version of Bobby Knight before Bobby Knight. And a little bit of trivia, Bobby Knight took classes at Ohio State that Woody Hayes taught.
An absolute legend.
Bobby Knight,
an absolute legend of the college football game.
Yeah,
and to hear Duffner talk about him as a mentor, fascinating. Absolutely fascinating.
When did he, what was his coaching range at Ohio State, Ira?
I would say 60s into the 70s.
I was thinking 50s into the 70s, certainly into the 70s.
So yeah, into the 70s.
I think he was like, when he retired, the only coach that had more wins.
Probably Coach Archie Griffin. A two-time Heisman winner? Mm-hmm. Yes, he did.
Pro Football Hall of Fame's littered with guys he coached.
Just wanted to throw that out there. I know who Woody Hayes is. Bobby Knight, obviously, is a much more modern-day figure.
I thought you got ticketed with Bud Wilkinson and New Rockney.
Now, Wilkinson, I could see someone having to explain who Bud Wilkinson. Now, here's one. I got a clarification. Both of you and I, Ira, mostly me, on the last podcast, I said something. I wrote this a couple times, but it needs to be clarified. I wrote how there's been only one coach with the Glazers as ownership group retained after two consecutive losing seasons. Same guy who won them the Super Bowl. Technically, Sam Weish they kept after two losing seasons. However, they inherited Weish. They didn't hire Weish.
That doesn't count. What you said is still correct.
Okay, I wanted to clarify. And to Steve's credit, he brought
that
up.
You mean two losing seasons under their ownership.
Yes, and if you want to be even more technical, I could be wrong, but Raheem was not hired by Malcolm, was he?
I mean, the Glazers hired the coach in 2009. I see what you mean.
Yeah, because
he had already had his stroke or something.
Yeah, he was. I mean, he was
incapacitated. Yeah, I believe at that point.
He wasn't in the day-to-day running of the team at that point.
Yes.
At any rate, and it's a valid point. I appreciate Steve bringing that up. So it's kind of a gray area, but I wanted to clarify that the Bucks did keep Sam Weish after two losing seasons, but they inherited him. They did not hire him.
Hey, Coach Duffner even weighed in on a guy who belongs in Canton. That's not there, Steve.
Yeah, we'll hear plenty of stuff from Coach Duffner. You know what? 30 seconds, Ira. Why did the Glazers, why do you think they did keep Sam Weish? They buy the team in January. They know that they stink and that this guy isn't the next culture changer. Why didn't they make a move right away?
Because they wanted to see him for themselves. They wanted to judge him for themselves. Let him coach the team in 95. Give him 1 year to prove himself. Look, all they heard was rumors about Sam, you know, about this guy. He can't do it. He's not good in the room. He doesn't have the respect of the players. I give the Glazers credit. They gave him a year to prove himself. And when the year is out, they decided we're going in another direction. I got no problems with the Glazers not coming in and immediately axing Sam Weish.
How much of a factor was it, and I didn't move down here until right after the 97 season, how much of a factor was it that they were campaigning for a new stadium that maybe that their focus was new stadium, not so much as a coach?
Well, I understand that.
I mean, I don't know.
Then maybe that would tend, if that was your impetus, you'd hire a coach with a higher resume, higher profile than Tony Dungy. Dungy wasn't going to sell any tickets in 1996.
Third choice.
Nobody
right?
knew who he was. Oh, I don't know about that.
Oh, really? Okay. I thought they tried to get Jimmy Johnson and Parcells.
Some people say that, but, you know, when the smoke cleared, they made a heck of a choice.
Oh,
they made a Hall of Fame choice.
Yeah.
And there you go.
I hear you, Sage. Everybody who subscribes to the podcast on Google Play, iTunes, Podbean, we appreciate all of you. Leave a review. Leave a comment. Get it done. There's no excuse. That's your homework. Right,
you know, Sage? You know why I'm in a great mood today, Steve? Because on his way out, Coach Duffner said, "See you around, Sage." It made my day, baby.
Last time I checked, you were number 6 on Google Play.
I like it.
I started to, when he came in here, I started to tell him who Ira is in case, you know, introduce ourselves in case I don't like to assume.
That's right.
He's like, I know all about Ira. Come on.
A legend. Did he call you a legend?
Well, he probably thought he saw me in with Woody Hayes in 1973.
Yeah, weren't you on that team, actually?
No, I didn't start until 76. 1976. There you go.
A lot of stuff from One Buck today. A lot of good stuff on the defense. We have plenty more to dive into.
And we're going to try to have more guests as the summer goes on, Steve. We're going to try.
Hey, you're the man with the Rolodex. You could call anybody. You know, if you say, hey, buddy, come on, let's meet. They'll meet you.
And along the lines of who is Woody Hayes, what's a Rolodex?
There you go.
At least that's in the dictionary. Is it Woody Hayes in the dictionary? Maybe he's not in the dictionary. All right, Sage. So what else we got? Anything else you got before we go out to Mark Duffner?
I'm telling you what, Mark Duffner speaks for himself. The guy was outstanding, just outstanding.
All right, here's Coach Duffner. All right, our guest of honor is here on the Ira Kaufman podcast, linebackers coach Mark Duffner. Thanks, Coach, for coming on in. I got to start off, Coach. 22 years. This is your 22nd year coaching in the NFL, nonstop from what I could tell, all the way through. Why do you love it so much? Why do you keep doing it? I'm assuming you don't need the money. What's going on here? Why do you love it so much?
Well, you know, it's when you have the privilege to work with anybody, with people, especially pretty elite athletes and really high character people for the most part, it's a blessing. And it's kept me young. You know, 22 years in the NFL, and I had 22 years of coaching in college football, so actually I'm going into my 44th year, and to be able to do something that you love, like any person would want to do, and be able to do it that long, it's again, like I said, a blessing, a real privilege for me.
Coach, last year, you know, we just had Mike Smith at the podium, Mark, and he said, you know, we got to do a heck of a better job as a whole defense. You're a part of the defense.
Yep.
How much of a piece out of you did last year take when you looked at the films?
Well, you know, a big piece. You know, we're all committed to it. We're all invested in it. And so that when we don't perform or produce the way that we're supposed to, it's a we mentality. We're all in it. It wasn't one position. It wasn't one player. It wasn't one coach. It's all of us. And so we've really, if you want to use the word recommitted, maybe that's it, but we've recommitted to really establishing this defense from the ground up. We've really worked hard right now at kind of unraveling everything, starting all over, building it from the basement so that our foundation is strong and we go forward from there. And so we're all in it. It's not just Coach Smith. It's not just one player. It's we, all of us, and we all take joy in the victories, and we certainly take ownership in when it's not so good.
Coach, from a linebacker perspective, if the guys up front do the job that Jason Light and Cutter and Mike Smith think they will, Mark, what impact will that have on your unit?
Well, Ira, you know, as you know from all your years of great covering the NFL, and the front kind of dictates how the game goes, and the linebackers will play off them now. That doesn't mean that, we're counting on them because we're going to take a snooze. I mean, we've got to do our job. But when you've got upfront people that can eat up blockers or that are able to hold gaps, then it's the accountability and the responsibility of the linebackers to fit off of them and fit into their job. They work hand in hand. It's like your left and your right hand. We can't do one without the other. So we're excited about the additions we've gotten both through free agency and the draft and the defensive front. We've got to do our job. I mean, again, we that's where it works, but they're kind of dependent on us. We're dependent on them.
You had great depth at your linebacker. I mean, last year you started out with injuries. You didn't bank on Kendall get back with to be a starter right away for a couple of reasons. One of which, he was coming off knee surgery, but he was forced in the lineup. He did well. Then when Levante David got hurt up in Minnesota, you know, I can imagine you guys were like, "Oh my gosh, the walls are caved in on me." The linebacker never suffered. And I think a lot of that is to your depth, and that speaks to you because you developed that depth. Even though the defense struggled last year, and I'm being polite when I say that. Did you take some personal satisfaction? You know, hey, at least my unit, we were able to keep our head above water.
Well, you know, anything that the linebackers are able to accomplish still is dependent and reflective of other units. We're not out there on an island by ourselves. So obviously those other groups had to be contributing to it. We just had to make sure that we were ready to play and do our job. That it's part of the whole, if you were. What kind of a part of the whole, if you will. What I was pleased about is when backup players had the opportunity to perform and produce, they did that in a way that we felt was positive. We've all got to get better, and that's certainly our objective. We're going to work hard to do that.
How much better can the linebacker unit be? The reason why I ask that is I know that Mike Smith, maybe you, maybe Mike, I'm not sure who, but you were asking some linebackers to do some things that they really maybe shouldn't have been doing because there were weaknesses of the defense. You had to, you know, when there's a fire, you don't care how big the hose is. You grab the hose. If guys are playing their positions the way they're meant to be and the way they're supposed to be, do you see the linebacker unit actually improving?
Well, our objective is to improve no matter what. And yes, regardless of what was and what will be, our goal is to improve. Now, certainly when other people are improving also, then everybody improves. So, I have high expectation for, number one, each individual in our group getting better and getting better at areas that we kind of look at what their strengths were last year, each player, and what their weaknesses were, and we're working hard to improve all those. Build on the pluses, improve the weaknesses or minuses. And so, yeah, I'm expecting that. And each guy's got a list of what they've got to do, and we're active in terms of pursuit of getting that done.
Coach, you mentioned sort of rebuilding the defense from the ground up. And is that something that the players have actually felt since practice start? Like, whoa, we're going back to square one here? Can you talk a little more about that?
Sure, I can. You know, it's been Coach Smith's and the staff's plan from the get-go, and really started with us. We took it apart in the offseason and went back and made sure that, again, we were detailed in how we're coaching, teaching, and presenting techniques and scheme to our players. And then when the players came back, we started off in the classroom in phase one. And from the get-go, from a communication and active participation of our players as we taught a defense, it wasn't coach directing players, writing and listening, which was part of it, but then they were part of it in terms of being able to demonstrate actively what their responsibility is in communication to one another, to in front of the group. A player went up and would be involved in installing the defense or saying what's going on. So there was true ownership and investment as we were putting in the defense step by step. And this has been a real active collective collaboration, I guess you'd that's maybe alliteration, but didn't mean to go down that road. But there's that kind of active participation, coaches, players, players to players, et cetera, in this defense.
So that represented a change.
That's a change.
From the past. Okay. Yep. Before we throw it back to the sage of Tampa Bay sports, we call him here.
Yeah, he is that.
You know, you were on Hard Knocks. You were very visible with the whole Riley Bulla cut thing. Did you watch that? And how hard was that for you? Did you feel bad for Riley? And, you know, they sort of threw you in the spotlight.
Well, no, if I was in the spotlight, I'm hoping that it didn't ruin the ratings. But my point would be, first of all, the Hard Knocks exposure was, I think, good for our players. Good in this way, they recognized that there was something else going on. It actually, if we took it to proper action, focus, even though there's other things going around, focus on that. When Riley was a highly competitive guy, worked his tail off, he got some exposure. Yes, he got cut. I feel for all of our guys when things go well for them, and I feel for them when they don't go so well. That happens in life, and so because it got some exposure, people saw it. But within our group, we've handled it with the right attention to each player, and Riley wound up being on the practice squad, ultimately got activated and played, so it all turned out good. I just hated to interrupt my meetings at times because CNN and NBC and all these people wanted to interview him when he was the media star. No, I'm kidding on that.
My last question. Sure, Coach, what's it like working with a fiery guy like Quan Alexander on a daily basis? And is it a challenge, Mark, that, you know, hey, I gotta bump my passion up. I got to match Quan Alexander, even in the meeting room.
Well, to be frank with you, he's trying to match mine. I mean, he's right now. No, but we both have a lot of energy, and that's a great thing. I think football, especially at linebacker and defense, it's about action. It's about energy. It's about enthusiasm. And, you know, I can see that when we go to the library, we've got to be quiet, or perhaps in church at different times. But when we're playing football, not nonsensical energy, but stuff that's appropriate and focused in on
and
helping
positive.
Us get better. And
yep.
Yes, and he's got that, and I love that. I mean, again, it's that kind of people that have helped me be who I am, and I've learned so much from all of them.
You
so,
can't coach that, right?
Yeah, you've got to bring that. And really, frankly, in this game, that's a positive. When people have energy and have enthusiasm, people tend to fend and feed off of that, and I'd like him to continue to infect people with that enthusiasm.
I actually have two questions for you.
Sure.
I think the first question, I think I'm right. I could be dead wrong. Did you not play for Woody Hayes?
I did not play for Woody Hayes.
Or Bruce?
No, I coached for Woody Hayes.
I was
a graduate assistant. I played for Lou Holtz at William & Mary.
Okay.
I played at William & Mary, but I coached at Iowa State for Woody Hayes, but I played for Lou Holtz at William & Mary.
You've got to have a Woody Hayes story.
I'll give you one very quickly. My first season at Ohio State was 1975. I was a graduate assistant. We went 10-0 in the regular season, and we're going to play the team up north away in the 11th game. And in that 11th game, so we're going to be undefeated if we win this game, and automatic berth to the Rose Bowl. In that game, we were behind at the team up north and had to come from behind during the course of the game to win the game. The game was November 22nd, 1975. After the game, I was absolutely – I mean, you're kidding me. It's my first year. We're undefeated. We're going to the Rose Bowl, national champions, it looks like, blah, blah, blah. Coach Hayes has the presence of mind, gets the team in the locker room after the game and says, listen, men, 12 years ago today, an assassin killed our president. Today, you had to have teamwork. You had to have resiliency. You had to have unselfishness. You had to have genuine character and care for one another to come back against a fine team. When we get back to Columbus tonight, you do all you can to spread those components back to our campus to get it back to where it needs to be, get our country back to where it needs to be. This is what he said after the biggest game of the year to our football
team. That tells you all you need to know about
it. A giant of a man and a tremendous coach.
What do you use to this day in coaching that maybe you learned from Woody Hayes?
Everything. I mean, lucky was I? No, I learned energy. I learned enthusiasm. I learned integrity. I learned organization. I learned connection with players, that when players understand you genuinely care about them, then your ability to coach and teach them and them to not let you down and you not to them, it's kind of a two-way, you take off.
And you that, can't fake that.
No, no, no. Players know when you're real or not. And so, and that man was real to the bone. And how lucky was I and all of us that were around him in his great career.
Mark, can't let you off the hook. You got a Hall of Fame voter sitting right here. And everybody likes to smack these guys around. Is there somebody in your mind, and it doesn't have to be, that is hanging out there that's not in the Hall of Fame that you think, hey, maybe you guys should take another look at?
And Coach Randy Gratishar.
I wish I did. That was a great, great player. He was before I got there, a great, great player. And you're going back, but that was a great Buckeye and Bronco for a long, long time. Speaking about the Hall of Fame and a representative there, I would say, again, I had the privilege to be around Tony Boselli when he was in Jacksonville, when I was coaching there, and he was actually retired by that point. But I coached against him when I was with the Bengals, and in that time they were in our same conference and part of it, and that guy was a phenomenal player, a great, great athlete. We were always concerned about him in terms of we had to design pressure to compensate for his ability to pass protect and run block. And so, again, a gentleman that would be under, I think, and I know Ira has got a lot of people to consider, but as a possible candidate for the Pro Football Hall of Fame, I would submit to him Tony Boselli based on his career, and certainly the career, but also the character that he's demonstrated post-playing.
I got you. And, hey, Sage, nothing else from you, Sage?
No, we really appreciate the coach's time. He's been great.
All right, well, since I know you love your boss, I got to ask you the quick one, really the money question here for the fans. It was a tough year for everybody with the Bucks. What do the fans really need to know about Dirk Koetter and how much he has this team and the example he sets, and what can you say about him?
Well, I would say first, I think what the fans can, I hope, see is that during the course of the season when things weren't going so well, this team still continued to play hard and compete. And so the players, I think, truly believe in Dirk. Dirk's got a great way to connect with them. I think they understand that basically he is with them through thick and thin. And I think they've done the same coming back. And that's how any great team organization is. You've got to have a we mentality and kind of arm in arm and hand in hand with that. He's been, relentless and extremely determined to leave no stone unturned in terms of every area of the program, how we got to make sure we're being the best in terms of connecting with our players, making sure that everything is T's crossed and I's dotted in terms of details, so that we put our players in the very best position to be successful, whether it be in the meeting room, the way we present, whether it be in the practice with the drills that you're doing, that everything has application to allow each player to reach their zenith, to get better and better. And so there's been a real, not that it wasn't before, I can't say this is a really change,
sure.
But I'd say if there's anything, we've all kind of, if there's a dial we could turn another notch, we're turning another notch.
How honest is he with players, Coach, and how much do players respect that?
Well, they respect him highly because he's directly honest. There's no BS to him. Now, he loves to kid with them and this type of thing, but that's what players and people like. I mean, he's a genuine person. It's not... he's a stone face. He knows the buttons, I think, to touch with players. But honesty, as you mentioned earlier, players, if they think you're a phony or you're a con,
you're done.
You're dead. Nothing like that in terms of our players and Dirk Koetter and what he's all about.
All right, Coach. Hey, thanks for the time.
Good luck, Coach.
This season.
Well, thank you very much.
We'll see you again.
We appreciate it, and we're looking forward to getting back with you, men. Thank you.
How about that? Coach Duffner coming in here. That was pretty cool. I thought he was pretty candid. What was your vibe in the room here?
My vibe is, as Lee often mentions on this podcast, jobs are on the line, and everybody in this building knows it. Everybody in this building knows what the situation is. The stakes are very high, coming off 5-11. Very, very high. You have a losing season again, 2 years in a row. People are going to be walking out the door, and everybody knows it, including the guys that are working so feverishly to get this team to end a 10-year playoff drought. 10 years.
All right, Ira, we will see you next week. Plenty to talk about the Duffner interview. We'll carve up some of that real cool stuff in there that we just heard, especially regarding the dissection and the rebuild of the defense. And we've got plenty more from the coaches and the offensive coaches who we'll be meeting with after we record this. So good to see you, Sage. Good to see you, Lee. And Ira, get out of here. Get some lunch. You're already grumbling. I hear your stomach on the microphone.